Welcome back to Knowledge at Wharton here on Sirius XM 111 Business Radio, powered by the Wharton School. Thanks for spending part of your day with us. Our final 30 of the day, and then we'll be back with you tomorrow at 10 a.m. Eastern Time, 7 a.m. Pacific, right here on Sirius XM 111. Don't forget our show replays in the evenings, 10 p.m. East, 7 p.m. out on the West Coast. And also a reminder to go to the Sirius XM website, which will allow you to download the app so that you can listen to all the great channels on the Sirius XM network outside of your car. Go to SiriusXM.com/app to find out more. Recently, we told you that the state of Hawaii was going to do away with certain sunscreens due to the impact that they are apparently having on coral reefs in that state. These sunscreens would have either oxybenzone or atenosinate in them. But some researchers disagree with the level of impact that this may be having, as well as have concerns about trying to get rid of sunscreens. Our friend Karen Glanz joins us. She's a professor of epidemiology and nursing here at the University of Pennsylvania and also a visiting professor at the University of Hawaii Cancer Center. She also spent more than a decade living and working there, and she joins us here in studio. Hello, Karen.
Hi, Dan. How are you?
Aloha, I guess. Aloha. I should be saying to you. So you obviously heard the segment that we did before and raised some concerns off of the research that was presented there.
Yeah. You know, I think the research as it was presented and discussed by Craig Downs is presented as if it's an open and shut case, and it's very clear and that this is a extremely strong impact on the coral reefs that needs to be dealt with, and that this legislation to ban sunscreens with oxybenzone and octinoxate should help to improve the health of the coral reefs and right. of the oceans. And I have concerns about the science, but I also have concerns about the cost-benefit ratio if this legislation is, you know, comes to fruition, is enacted, has been passed, has yet to be signed by the governor, and would go into effect in 3 years. I guess first is that coral reef damage, which is widespread and happening all around the world, is multi-causal. It is not caused by one or two chemicals. In fact, to quote a prominent marine and coral reef researcher who I've spoken with recently, if you were to take the top 10 causes of coral reef degradation, you would start with global warming.
Right.
Next would be kind of human massive products like things like wastewater and pollution into the water.
Right.
Then you would have other things like overfishing, tourists stomping around on the reef, things like that. And she said out of about 10, she'd put sunscreen chemicals possibly with the current evidence at about number 10. So, you know, wouldn't expect that even if we were able to completely get those out of the water, which I'm not sure, that this legislation would do, that it would have a huge impact on repairing or reducing damage to the coral reefs.
Now, the other part to this that you've brought up is the fact that there is a concern about going away from sunscreens in general because of the benefits that they can provide for people in terms of protection of their skin, not having skin cancer, or at least mitigating the rays that come from the sun that could lead to skin cancer.
Right, right. And that's a potential downside. If people, through either confusion or through things like the increased cost of some of the alternative sunscreens that are becoming available that people that are said to be reef-friendly. And some people don't like the way they feel on the skin. You know, maybe new formulations may improve on that.
Right.
But if people choose not to use sunscreen, then it's inevitable that the risk of skin cancer will go up, and the protection afforded by sunscreen, which is not the only way to reduce the risk of skin cancer, but
right.
is a prominent way, and especially a prominent way for people who might be going in the water because wearing hats and long sleeves may be less likely.
Is there something concerning specifically about these two chemicals that they have obviously brought forward, the oxybenzone and the octinosinate, that has a concern in general for you with having them in these sunscreens in the first place?
Well, these are probably the most common active ingredients that right. are used in most major selling sunscreens.
Okay.
There have been concerns raised about them, concerns about the possibility that they may be hormone disruptors. There are many, many things in our environment, in our food,
right.
et cetera, that are hormone disruptors. There are those who remain skeptics about their effectiveness, but their effectiveness has been well demonstrated for preventing sunburn, which is causally related to right. skin cancer. But there was a large study done in Australia it's called the Nambour study, where middle-aged men in I think it was 18 communities, were assigned to either put on sunscreen daily, and they were provided with sunscreen, and could put it on any time, but to put on sunscreen daily over
right.
a prolonged period of time. And then there were control communities.
Right.
And had to be done by communities because there was a lot of nudging and convincing people to get
sure.
them to consistently use sunscreen. It's
yeah.
not like feeding them a pill or injecting them with something.
Right. Because sometimes when you get into the winter months or the cooler months, it's not the thing that people think of first is slapping
right.
sunscreen on your arms or your
yeah.
legs or whatever.
And the study was done in the state of Queensland in Australia, a very sunny state.
Yeah.
They call it the Sunshine State, actually, there. They did it there because it would be possible, if sunscreen made a difference, it would be possible to see that difference in a period of about 10 to 15 years.
Right.
Because the incidence of skin cancer is higher in Australia due to the environment, not due to genetic differences.
Right.
So what they found out of that study was that the sunscreen was effective for reducing squamous cell cancers, one of the major non-melanoma skin cancers. It was effective for reducing photoaging of the skin.
Right.
And ultimately, after the long follow-up period, it reduced the number of melanomas. There were fewer in the group that used sunscreen than in the group that did not. And so this is, been published in top scientific journals and is generally widely accepted now. Again, it doesn't mean sunscreen is the only way to prevent skin cancer
sure.
or should be relied on solely. But the evidence, and this came out, within the last 5 to 7 years, is far stronger than it was a decade ago. 10
yeah.
to 15 years ago, I, like many people, was a bit of a doubter on sunscreen. I couldn't do a study like this, but this team in Australia did this really well done study.
So then in terms of this idea, then why the push, do you think, in your mind to really mark these sunscreens as the main reason why coral reefs in some parts of the world are being impacted negatively?
I think that it's the flip side of the coin that has caught on, particularly with environmental advocates, some of the public, has been convincing to some legislators, is that it's kind of the idea that you can do something, and like this might be a thing we can do that will make a difference.
Right.
There is nobody bringing to the legislature a bill to reduce global warming or to massively change the way that wastewater is disposed of. But again, it's not only with its impact on the coral reef in sunscreen. These chemicals are actually in a lot of personal care products.
Right.
And nobody is proposing that we ban these products in lotion or cosmetics.
Right.
What happens with those products is not necessarily that people are going to be going into the ocean with those products on every day, nor are they going in with sunscreen every day.
Right.
But that those will, a lot of them will be washed off or excreted somehow, find their way into the water as well.
Right.
So from that point of view, and I have not seen that analyzed, it's almost a question of like, how much could you actually reduce those chemicals
sure.
through the actions of this ban? This ban does not make it illegal for tourists to bring in whatever kind of sunscreen they want, or for people to order it on the internet. And further, there is no money in the bill for enforcement or monitoring of what's sold in the stores.
Right, which makes you wonder how they're going to actually implement this in the first place. One, if you don't have people that would be out there being the sunscreen police to do this, or, you know, have the money to prevent these sunscreens from coming into the state of Hawaii, or having people at the airports checking bags for these types of sunscreens, correct?
Right, and that's all kind of ludicrous when you think about it. But I can say this with pretty good authority, because last week before I left Honolulu to return to Philadelphia, I spoke to the regulatory director at the State Health Department, not the director of regulatory affairs, but of this type of regulation.
Yeah.
And he just pretty much reiterated, I don't have people to do this. They're not planning to give me money. It's not in the legislation. And also, because this is going to take effect in 2021, he made a good point that, well, the legislature makes budgets year by year, and they're not making a budget for 2021. But there were some people that wanted to see this go into effect even sooner. And there was some money in it for education, but none in it for enforcement and monitoring. There was a penalty that was specifically attached to these products being sold.
And again, what would the education be? I mean, how do you bring that forward? I mean, I think education, obviously, on certain issues is a very important topic. But how do you bring education forward on an issue that, I guess, one, doesn't have the funding from the state to be able to do enforcement? And then where would the education piece go to? To the local people, to the people that are coming to visit the state of Hawaii? Well, I don't know how that would play out.
All good points. It could be done any number of ways. I mean, right now, Hanama Bay, which is the most popular snorkeling spot on the island of Oahu that sees millions of visitors every year, actually requires a little lecture and film as people are going in about, being good to the reef. It's not all about sunscreen.
Yeah,
it's,
right.
It's more general. Don't feed the fish, et cetera.
Sure, yeah.
They could do something there, but there is no plan, and which I think is your point. And if there was a plan, it would really have to be rooted in solid scientific evidence to be sure that it's not just, I mean, we think people should cover up and protect themselves from the sun with hats, with shirts, with, long clothing, with sunglasses. Sunscreen's not the only thing people should depend on.
Right.
But what would that education look like? Big question mark.
Then I guess my next question is, how does do the companies that are making these sunscreens react to this? And knowing that, I think in general, these companies are aware of trying to make sure that their products, I would guess for the most part, that their products are healthy for the people that are using them, as much as they can healthy for elements of the environment. Bringing in different products, more natural products. I know that some companies are trying to go that route. How do the sunscreen companies react to this?
So there was some testimony before the legislature, pro and con from different companies,
right.
And it's a pretty big business in terms of dollar sales per year. There are a couple of different things kind of behind that. First of all, the Food and Drug Administration has, as part of its mandate, regulating over-the-counter products that are meant for health reasons. So, and it was in 2011, 2012, some of it didn't go into effect till 2013, that they, for the first time in 20 years, updated regulations related to sunscreen. There are two types of regulations. One has to do with demonstrating testing for effectiveness in laboratory standards. The other has to do with labeling. And the labeling rules were particularly important and particularly of interest to me in the kind of work I do, because there were some claims being made on sunscreen package labels that were implausible.
Yeah.
And if they're not regulated, then they just go on. And They were things like waterproof for 8 hours.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
And now they're allowed to say water resistant for up to 80 minutes. That's kind of a big difference.
Especially if you're planning to be on the beach all day.
There were there were things about what SPF, a company, could claim, and because the higher SPF is not like multiples.
Right.
And so they can't. They can no longer say SPF 100.
Yeah.
They can say 30 plus. And those are just some examples. So one of the things that's really interesting to me that I and my research team plan to look into is actually how this fits into this emerging sunscreen product industry that's coming up with trying to make what they're calling reef-safe sunscreens. Because
right.
reef-safe is on the package labels of some of these new products. And to my knowledge, it has not been approved by the FDA as an allowable label. So that's a big question mark.
Sure.
It's probably not an allowable label because it hasn't, there's no science behind it. There's
right.
no proof that it is reef safe, even though it just means it's oxybenzone and octinoxate free. They're usually mineral sunscreens that have their active ingredients are zinc and zinc oxide that are actually barriers to the sun, between the sun and your skin. And there are a lot of small companies that are coming up. I think some of them are truly environmentally concerned vendors, you know, chemists, whatever, small companies. And some of them are probably people who are opportunistic and see an opportunity, just like, say, let's use organic food labeling as an analogy to see here's a sales opportunity. So as far as the quality control, both of their effectiveness of their products and the adherence to the labeling rules, there are a lot of questions to be looked
but
at.
But the expectation, when we talked with Craig before, the expectation is, and obviously the governor right now is very busy having to deal with a state that has volcanoes, you know, having spewing ash all over the place right now. But the expectation is that I think if there is an end to that, then one of the first things that will be addressed is this bill that is sitting on his desk, correct?
Well, the legislative session in Hawaii occurs during the winter and spring, and then there's a period of time that the governor has to sign bills. He has until June 25th to sign this bill.
Okay.
So there are hundreds of bills that come out of the legislature. This is one that rose to the fore and got a lot of public attention, but there are a number of others too. So there are people trying to make their case to the governor. Currently, the signs suggest that he'll probably sign it.
Karen Glanz joining us here in studio is a professor of epidemiology and nursing here at the University of Pennsylvania. She's also a visiting professor at the University of Hawaii Cancer Center. Your comments are welcome at 844-WHARTON, 844-942-7866. Or if you'd like, send us a comment via Twitter, either at BizRadio111 or my Twitter account, which is at DanLoney21. I mean, there is a concern that, and we've talked about this topic over the last few years with you, is that sunscreen has a benefit to its use, whether you're in Hawaii or if you're down at the Jersey Shore or Florida, or if you're walking up and down the street in Nebraska. You know, there are benefits to it. Is there a concern in your mind of a backlash against sunscreen in general that obviously could potentially impact people in terms of the possibility of contracting some form of skin cancer?
Yes. Absolutely, that is a concern, and you kind of hit the nail on the head, to use an analogy. I mean, this is like hitting a nail with a 2-ton truck, because there are plenty of people that don't even go in the water that are out exposed to, to use Hawaii as the example,
right,
although Nebraska's good too, to the hot sun, and they may be out walking, running. You know, they may be kids out playing, and they need to be protected. And why would we be trying to take away from them the option of an affordable and maybe effective and potentially acceptable sunscreen? And acceptability of sunscreens, as well as the perception and belief that they're useful is really important.
Right.
And affordability, because the most of the new products tend to be more expensive multiples.
Yes, I've seen that recently. Going into a store to get sunscreen and you're paying $35 or $40 for a bottle of sunscreen these days.
Yeah.
Which, is certainly something that you don't have to deal with. So is the expectation that obviously there is the research that Craig did. There are the numbers that you're bringing forward. Is there an expectation that these are elements that obviously they're important points to bring up as talking points, but we need to go back to the science, all of the science, to really dig deeper as to what the impact really is?
We do need to go back to the science, but we also need to, and I think we have an opportunity to develop the science. The fact that this is set to go into effect in 3 years, if the governor signs it, actually opens up the potential for a really big natural experiment, and gives us a chance to get a baseline, which is a much better way. Human experimentation and human observation is different than the laboratory experiment, as is the reality out in the ocean is different than the reality in a lab with ocean water. So there's a real opportunity to look at how does human behavior change, how does product availability change, and what is the effect on the water and the marine environment and the coral reefs. So we have a real chance to look at that.
But as you said, there are so many different elements that could be impacting coral reefs, and there are so many other pieces that need to be addressed as well, that, if your concern truly is figuring out some way to be able to mitigate what's happened to coral reefs, you need to have just an unbelievably multifaceted approach to be able to bring that forward.
Absolutely. And that's what we hope to do. one thing that I haven't seen, and if you recall having had this conversation with Craig, I'd be interested in hearing about if this ban goes into effect and if it is reasonably effective, meaning let's say 60 to 70% of people wearing sunscreen wear sunscreen without the so-called offending chemicals in it. How much impact and how soon is that likely to have in the marine environment and the coral reefs?
Yeah.
Because, if in 50 years it might make a teeny tiny effect, then we really ought to be looking at some more large-scale, more impactful approaches.
Karen, great seeing you again. Thank you very much for coming in.
Thank you, Dan.
Karen Glantz from here at the University of Pennsylvania. We're done for the day. We will be back with you tomorrow at 10 a.m. Eastern Time right here on SiriusXM 111. Many thanks to Patty McMahon and Monique Nazareth for putting the show together. Dion Simpkin sitting in the big chair on the other side of the glass, making it sound great. Everybody, enjoy your day. We will talk to you tomorrow at 10 a.m. Eastern Time right here on SiriusXM 111.